Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we are going to have two of our favorite guests, Jerry Branum, who was a former writer for Muscle and Fitness magazine and also for Iron Man magazine. And he will be joined by Phil Williams. Phil was the 1985 NPC Nationals overall winner, and he also went on to win the 1988 Chicago Pro Show. And I've got both Phil and Jerry on today to talk about the unfortunate death of Mr. Olympia 2018, Sean Roden, who just passed away on, I believe it was Saturday, November 6th, just this last weekend. And we're also going to have a discussion about all the recent deaths in the bodybuilding world. This has been an unbelievable year. I've been involved in bodybuilding for over 40 years. I've never, ever seen a year like this before where we've had so many bodybuilders dying so quickly at young ages. And so we're going to talk about that. Before we get to that, I want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. They have offices all over the United States, but they can work with anybody in the continental United States just through their website. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation, plus they'll give you 20% off your first order. All right. So it's good to be on the podcast again. I know it's been a little bit of time since we've done our last podcast. I think the last one we did was before the Mr. Olympia. So I took like a month off. I didn't plan it that way, but I was just very, very busy. And I know I got quite a few emails from you guys asking me if I was okay. So I appreciate all that. Yeah, basically what I was doing was I was in the process of quitting my job, where I was working full-time as a security officer for a hospital out here in Tampa, which I've had that job for 3 years. And I was transitioning to another job where I'm doing online coaching for a company called Pro Physique. And my friend Paul Revelia owns Pro Physique. And I met Paul when I first moved out here to Tampa about 10 years ago. So Paul's a really good guy. And I know he coaches a lot of bikini competitors, a lot of pro bikini competitors. I talked to Paul a couple months ago. I was just going to ask him some questions about how I could increase my YouTube channel, because Paul has like 300,000 subscribers on his YouTube channel. And I had no idea that he was running this company called Pro Physique. So he has coaches that do online coaching, and he asked me if I wanted to work for him. So for the last couple months, I've been trying to do both jobs. I've been trying to do the online coaching on the side and also continue my job as a security officer. And it was just getting harder to do both. So Pro Physique said they could give me a lot more clients. I'm mostly handling men in their 40s and 50s. So they said they could get me a lot more if I quit my job. So I decided to finally quit my job, which I did last week. And it was just really hard getting some interviews set up for this podcast while I was doing both of those jobs. So now the one job is over with, the other job is on. So if you guys are interested in hiring me as a coach online for your training and nutrition needs, if you're getting ready for a contest or you want a physique transformation or whatever you're trying to do, just look up prophysique.com and request me. And I would be happy to help you guys out. So that is what has been going on for the last month. So I have not talked to you guys since the Mr. Olympia contest, where I was backstage doing interviews And this was my second year in a row doing that. So thanks to Sean Ray for helping me get on board with the Mr. Olympia team. I had a great time out there again in Orlando, Florida. And unfortunately, we had one of our deaths that we were going to talk about today. George Peterson, who was one of the top bodybuilders in the 212 division, passed away just like 2 days before the contest. He was out in Orlando getting ready to compete. He no doubt would have been in the top three or four at the 212 division in the Mr. Olympia contest. And he passed away at the age, I believe, of 37 years old. Unbelievable. So we were rocked by that news. And now, just this last weekend, we've had Sean Roden pass away, who was only the fourth Mr. Olympia in the history of the Mr. Olympia to pass away. And we're going to talk about that at the beginning of our interview with Jerry and Phil. So it's just been an unbelievable year in the world of bodybuilding for all these people passing away. It's really, really unfortunate. All right, so that's what's been going on. But I really had a good time at the Mr. Olympia, despite the passing of George Peterson. Glad I got a chance to do that. So again, thanks to Sean Ray for inviting me out there. What else? Well, I've been dieting and I've been getting in shape. I haven't been in shape for a couple of years because I had those hernia surgeries over the last couple of years. So decided to get in shape, especially now that I've got all this extra time now because I'm not working full time at the hospital. So I'm trying something different this month. I'm doing a double split routine where I'm doing a pump workout for each body part, in addition to my regular workout. So I'm training twice a day on about four of the days I'm training, and I'm training about 6 days a week. So this should be interesting because I'm already really lean. I'm just trying to get a little bit leaner, maybe another 5 pounds, another inch off my waist. I'll let you guys know how this experiment works during the month of November. And I'm hoping to really be in top shape by December. I'm going to maybe do some photos, some videos, nothing specific, no competitions or anything like that. I just want to see what I look like at the ripe old age of 58. I did an interview recently for Sal's Classic Bodybuilding. I got the link below here if you guys want to check it out. Sal did a really good job interviewing me. He did a lot of research on me, used a lot of pictures of me in the interview, so that was really cool. And I think he's going to do a part two coming up. So, yeah, check that out if you get a chance. And I also did a video, a shoulder training video with Paul from Pro Physique. And that's gotten a lot of hits. And we're going to do more of those for guys over 50. So I also got the link down there below in the description. You can check that out as well. That's about it. And at the end of our interview today, which is going to be part one of our interview because me and Jerry and Phil talked for so long, I decided to make it two parts instead of giving you guys a 2 hour interview. So this will be part one. And at the end of our interview, I'm going to read an article from Muscle Builder and Power Magazine. This will be from the August 1978 issue. And since we are talking about drugs and bodybuilding and steroids, this was one of the first articles I ever read about steroids. It's called Arnold, Life with and Without Steroids. And it's written by Ahmed Tani. And this was one of the first articles I ever read about steroids, where Arnold, who was about 3 years retired from bodybuilding at this point, opens up about steroids. And he talks about what he thinks about steroids, how he used them. So it's pretty interesting. I think he was pretty open about it. I'm not sure if he told the total truth, but I'm going to read this article for you guys as soon as we get done with our interview with Gary Branum and Phil Williams. All right. So I think that's all I got to say. So without further ado, here is part one of our interview with Jerry Branum and Phil Williams, where we talk about the passing of Sean Roden, and we also talk about all these recent deaths in the world of bodybuilding. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends Show. I have two of my good friends with me today, Mr. Jerry Branum, who was a writer for Muscle and Fitness Magazine and also Iron Man Magazine, and now he runs his own newsletter called Applied Metabolics. And we have Mr. Phil Williams, who was the 1985 MPC Nationals winner and also the 1988 Chicago Pro winner and one of my favorite bodybuilders from the 1980s. So I have both of these gentlemen here today. First of all, we're going to talk about the passing of a Mr. Olympia, Mr. Sean Roden, who was the 2018 Mr. Olympia. And we're also going to talk about all these recent deaths in the world of bodybuilding. It's a subject that everybody seems to be talking about because we've had so many people passing away So first of all, welcome to the show, Jerry and Phil. Good to see you guys again.
Well, thanks for having us.
Great to be here, John.
Well, let's start off with the unhappy subject of Sean Rohde. He just passed away yesterday on Saturday, November 6th, I believe it was, or at least that's when it was announced on the internet. And Sean was only 46 years old. I was going over some research before we started, and now there have been 16 Mr. Olympia winners. Only three of them up until yesterday had passed away, and that was the first Mr. Olympia, Larry Scott, the second Mr. Olympia, Sergio Oliva, and Franco, who was, I believe, the fourth Mr. Olympia. And I was looking at their ages. Now, Larry was 75 when he passed away. Sergio was 71, and Franco was 78. So all these guys were in their 70s, and Sean passed away at only 46 years old. So this was a real, real, real tragedy in the world of bodybuilding, and also just a tragedy because I think Sean Rohde was such a fantastic champion. Me and Jose Raymond just did our Olympia predictions about a month ago, and Jose said that Big Ramy was going to win the show, and no one could beat him as long as Big Ramy was in shape. But he said if Sean Rohde would have been in the show, we both agreed Sean Rohde would be able to be Mr. Olympia. So this guy was – I was hoping Sean Rohde was going to bring back the Mr. Olympia to where the shape and the symmetry and the aesthetics were a big priority again. And unfortunately, he was never allowed to compete again. Now he only won one Mr. Olympia, and then he passed away.
Right. Sean has a distinction of being, as you pointed out, the youngest Mr. Olympia to die at 46. And strangely enough, he was the oldest Mr. Olympia to win the title.
Yeah.
Three. That's kind of ironic when you think about it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
But, the other guys, you have Larry Scott had Alzheimer's disease, and that's probably what, gradually killed him. And as you pointed out, he died at 75. Sergio, I believe, had kidney failure.
Yeah.
That was the cause of death at 71. And Franco, the story was that he was swimming in Sardinia on a vacation, and he got a heart attack while he was swimming and, just went under the water,
Yeah.
But the thing is, as you point out, these guys were older. I mean, they weren't very old, but, they were older. For Sean to pass away at 46, definitely there's something very wrong there. And Phil, I think you'll agree with it. What bothers me about this also is that, the way the internet is today, I'm sure somebody's going to mention this thing. They say, well, it was the steroids that killed him. I know that's coming. It's coming. I mean, they're going to say he died from steroid use. First of all, that's completely speculative. You don't know. As far as I know, maybe you guys could correct me if I'm wrong, he didn't have any upcoming contest that he was training for. I mean, I don't know. Did they grant him? Was he allowed to compete again, or was he still banned? I don't even know. Do you know?
I've been watching the internet the last few days, and so there's a podcast called Bodybuilding and Bullshit. It's by Nick Trujilli, who is a former IFBB pro, and it's pretty entertaining. He doesn't hold back, and he talks about anything. Now, he was good friends with Sean Rohde, and he said something I never heard before. He said Sean has had two previous heart attacks.
Oh, wow.
Since 2019.
I didn't know that.
No. And he said a lot of it had to do with the fact that he wasn't allowed to compete, and he was going through a lot of stress with this trial. He said the trial was coming up in 2 months.
Yeah.
And I also heard that Sean was really big. And Phil, you said you saw him recently before he died.
He was close to, I'm going to take a guess, estimated guess, 275 plus.
I heard he was 300.
Wow.
I heard he was 300. So,
wow.
Well, I heard, and maybe he was thinking maybe he could do the Olympia next year. And that's why he was bulking up and getting so big.
Well, Sean was really old school in that respect, in the sense that, a lot of the guys, as you guys both know, you guys have been around long enough though, that years ago, the typical methodology was to gain a lot of weight in the off season. They called it bulking up. Remember?
Yeah.
And a lot of times you didn't care. You wanted to get big. You would just shovel food down. You weren't really paying much attention to fat, body fat levels.
Right.
You wanted to get bigger because getting bigger usually meant you were stronger. You could use heavier weights. Therefore, your muscle size. And then as it, maybe a couple of months before a show, you'd start to, you know, cut the food down and, you know, try and get rid of the fat. And as, you know, Billy knows, you know, peak for a contest. And, you know, you've done that, John, too. I even did it myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the thing is, Sean was kind of old school in the sense that he believed in bulking up in the office. If you ever look at pictures of him, I mean, he said he didn't care about calories. He just wanted to eat. As a matter of fact, there was a big controversy, John. I don't know, Phil, you might remember this. A couple of years ago, two, 3 years ago, he did a opposing exhibition.
Oh, yeah.
And John Ray just ripped him apart because he came on stage wearing boots and weird, you know, trunks or shorts. I don't remember.
Almost like shorts.
Shorts, exactly, right. But he looked, I mean, this is the guy, I think he was the current Mr. Olympia at that time.
Yeah, it was after he won the first Olympia, yeah.
You know, and you know, when he won the Olympia, Sean's greatest strength, as you pointed out, you know, when you were talking about him possibly winning the Olympia, and I think, Phil, you'll agree, he had that beautiful aesthetics and symmetry.
Yeah.
He was like a kind of a hybrid of size, shape, and symmetry.
Yeah.
Which is what Olympia should look, Mr. Olympia, you know, I'm not trying to put down Big Ramey. I respect the fact that he's put on that much size. You know what I mean? But, you know, to be objective, he's not everyone's cup of tea. People,
right.
His legs are too big for some. They don't like his kind of appearance. He's just too much. You know?
Yeah.
Whereas a guy, you know, Sean had those fine lines. And, you know, he does his guest posing a couple of months after winning the Olympia. People expect him to show up looking at least
like Mr. Olympia.
Like he did when he won, right?
Yeah.
And then he has these big, giant legs, no cuts.
Right.
A pot belly. And he does a couple of perfunctory poses and walk, like he's bored and walks off the stage, just wants to, and Sean Ray made a video, ripped him apart, said, you know, this is not professional. You know, if you're going to take people's money, you have the responsibility to show up at least in maybe 70% of contest shape, you know?
Yeah.
But see, the reason Sean did that was, again, he believed in eating, he had this idea of, you know, trying to get bigger was to eat in between shows to get bigger. And I think he also kind of had the philosophy, which is true, that for a Mr. Olympia to win consecutively, you know, rather than 1 year, you have to show some improvement. Or I think we talked about this before, John, either you show more improvement or you look at least as good as you did. In other words, you get in the same shape. One of the two. If you backtrack, one of the other guys is going to win.
Absolutely.
See, this is what happened with Phil Heath and Sean. Phil Heath, Phil Heath was going for, what was it, his seventh Olympia, John?
It would have been his eighth. Yeah.
He'd already tied
Arnold.
Arnold, that's right. He was going for the eighth, which would have tied Haney and Coleman. Am I right?
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, he ended in, I'm not, again, not trying to put down Phil Heath, but unfortunately, he had that problem with the gut. Remember, Phil, sticking out? And I think I'm guessing that Sean entered in superb maximal peak condition.
Yeah, he was. I was there. Yeah.
So you had a guy who was the incumbent Mr. Olympia, who was seven times Mr. Olympia. I mean, tremendous edge even before the curtain opens.
Right.
But what you had was a guy who unexpectedly came in the best shape of his life. Where Phil was not in the best shape of his life, and that's why he lost, see?
Right.
But I totally agree with the idea that stress definitely played a part, probably, in why he died. And there's another factor, which a lot of people don't know about Sean Roden, is that Sean was very close with his father. I mean, you know, some people have close relationship with their parents, others don't.
Yeah.
And he was extremely close with his father. He was born in Jamaica. His father, unfortunately, I guess, was a heavy smoker. He died from lung cancer in 2002. Sean took it very, very hard. I mean, he needed therapy. That's how bad it was. Instead, he turned to alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Heavy alcohol. I mean, like Days of Wine and Roses type. This guy was drinking every day. You know, he got fat, out of shape. 6 straight years he did that.
Now, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, for 6 years. Now, here's the thing. A lot of people, you know, it's no secret what alcohol does to your brain and this and that. You know, it's very hard on the liver. A lot of people don't realize alcohol in large amounts is what they call myotoxic. It destroys muscle fibers in skeletal and cardiac muscles. Mm-hmm. Why am I saying this? This might have contributed to his death at 46. He might have damaged and the previous heart attacks you mentioned, which I didn't even know about till right. now. He might have had kind of an accident waiting to happen situation.
Yeah.
A combination of stress and, you know, maybe a little bit of heart damage from all the drinking, that might have really done him in. This is just speculation on my part, but it makes sense from a medical point of view. And there's another bodybuilder. I won't mention his name. This guy's very famous many years ago from the 70s. He's a friend of mine. I don't want to embarrass him by mentioning, but he also was an alcoholic for a couple of years. He also caused a lot of heart damage. Still has it today. So he also went on a binge drinking for several years. So it can definitely do that. But again, I'm just speculating because, as I said, dying at 46 is not a natural thing. I mean, you can't say dying natural cause. It just doesn't happen, you know.
Yeah. But let me ask you this, Jerry. You would think that a guy in his position would have regular checkups, right? And they would be able to see something coming up and say, hey, wait, look, there's a problem here we need to look at. I mean, does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I don't know if he did have medical checkups.
That's unknown.
Because if he did, you're absolutely right. They could have detected it. There's that, several ways. Ultrasound, there's blood tests. There's what they call the Berkeley heart tests, which are kind of these lab tests that go beyond the normal lipid panel. Mm-hmm. That certain heart abnormalities before they happen that if you don't take care of them, you will get a heart attack or stroke, unquestionably, you know. So I don't know. That's an unanswered question. I don't know whether he was being medically monitored. He should have been with that, you know, with that alcohol background. He should have. And also there's another factor. I don't know Sean well enough. I knew him, but not well enough to know this. I don't know whether he was doing drugs that not necessarily steroids or anabolics, but drugs that might be very hard on the heart. For example, methamphetamine is extremely hard on the heart. Cocaine is terrible for your heart. People don't realize when I remember in the 70s, when everyone thought cocaine was a benign drug, if you snorted it.
Right, right.
What they didn't know back then was that, and this is something for people to know who are watching this, every time you snort cocaine, you're causing a little bit of damage to your heart, just a little bit. Mm. It's called contraction bands. The little bit of the heart breaks down, you know what I mean? If you do this regularly, you set up your heart to the point where you could be walking down the street, and suddenly you go into what they call a ventricular fibrillation, and where your heart stops pumping blood and you drop dead. You don't expect it. Comes out of nowhere. It just can happen, right? It's not a heart attack. It's basically you die of a rhythm abnormality because your heart just, you know, if your brain doesn't get blood in 6 minutes, you're dead. So that's another factor we don't know. Was he doing any coke or speed? We don't know that. You know what I mean?
I just think the stress alone, right, Jerry? I mean, can you imagine being in that position where you've trained as a bodybuilder for so many years and you finally reach the top and you win Mr. Olympia? And then right after that, this lady comes out and accuses him of raping her. And I don't know whether it was true or not true, but then this thing doesn't even go to trial. And then COVID comes along and then they have to delay the trial. So then, and then the IFBB or the whoever's running, I think it was AMI at the time, said he can't go in the Olympia. So now he's not able to defend his title. And then it goes on again. And he's seeing, you know, I'm sure he would have won another one or two Olympians. Yes, I'd be going crazy if I was him. It'd like ruin his life.
Now, you're innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
Yeah.
Very good point.
So he should have been allowed to compete regardless of that situation.
Well, let me tell you something, a story about Sean related to this. I actually, you know, of course I knew of him winning the Olympia. I used to see him coming at night. He trained twice a day. He would do his weight workout earlier in the day. At night, he'd come in and just do aerobics. After he got second, was that 2017, John, when he got second in the Olympia?
Maybe, yeah. I think he got second or third.
Yeah, when he got second or third, I can't remember which one, I had never met the guy. I knew he was. I heard he came to Gold's, but I never actually I recognized him one night. And I walked up to him. I introduced myself. He had no idea who I was. I wouldn't expect him to. But anyway, I said, Sean, I got to tell you, honest truth, in my personal opinion, I said, you had the most aesthetic physique in the entire contest. I said, I think I would have given you the title. And I'm saying this, I have nothing to gain. I just want to tell you, and this is my opinion. And he just looked at me. He's kind of a quiet guy, and he shook my hand and said, thanks, and walked away. That was it. The next time I spoke to him, you guys know who Danny Hester is, right?
Yeah.
The classic, first classic Mr. Hood.
Yeah.
Danny contacted me. He asked me if I was interested in doing a podcast with him. I said, great. I always wanted to do a podcast. So he arranged for us to meet in a studio in Venice. And the first guest was none other than Sean Roden, right? So we all met in this studio. And, you know, Danny and I asked him questions. And he was very forthcoming. We talked about off-season training. And I asked him how many times he thinks he could win the Olympia. And he was pretty humble. He didn't want to predict. Well, you know, he wasn't like a Phil Heath type of guy where he'd say, well, it's up to the other guys to beat me. I'll win it. You know, he didn't say that. He says, if I can get in shape, I think I have a chance, something like that. A very humble answer, you know. And unfortunately, it was like a 2-hour podcast. It went great. Never went anywhere. never got on the internet. Danny Hester doesn't know what happened to it. I mean, we had a professional crew taping it supposedly from Google itself. Google doing the video and the sound. Everything was perfect and adjusted and this and that. Never went anywhere, right? The next time I spoke to Sean, this is what relating what Phil says. It was after this, you know, when it came out that, you know, he had the story was that he was doing a posing exhibition. And there's some woman who he mentored. I guess she was some sort of competitor. I don't know whether it was physique or I don't know. Anyway, she came to his hotel room. I don't know whether she asked to go or he invited her. That I don't know. The story was that, you know, he threw himself on her and raped her, you know. And the thing is, you know, the thing that really bothered me about that was, first of all, I had known that Sean, the guys who knew Sean was kind of what you call a womanizer. In other words, he liked to go after various women. You know, he was one of those. He wasn't not raping them. They were willing. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And for all I knew, I watched a lot of women kind of come on to him at Gold's Gym. You know, and they were good looking women. I said to myself, maybe she's just one of them. But why is she saying rape? And, you know, and I said to myself, the next thing I saw was suddenly the IFBB, as you said, John, they suddenly said he's banned from competition and he's ostracized. I'm thinking, wait a minute. He hasn't even gone through a trial yet. Right. We don't know if he's guilty. Why are you doing this to the man? And I publicly went on Facebook and I said, this is disgusting. This is not justice. I said, I think the IFBB sucks for doing it to this guy. Before a trial? Before a conviction? You know,
I think it might have been AMI jury that did it.
It was AMI.
Yeah, because they own the Olympia. Yeah.
Yeah, I said, what happened to the tenet of innocent until proven guilty? What happened here? And so Sean Ray again jumps in, and he says, "Well, you have to understand, Jerry, for him to show up at the contest, if they let him compete in the Olympia, it kind of makes them look bad. You know, the AMI." They felt they would put a bad spin on the show to have a guy who was accused of rape. I said, but wait a minute. He wasn't convicted.
Right.
That's the thing. This is not like an OJ case or something like that. He wasn't convicted. It's her word against his. And how many women have accused men of rape where it turns out that the guys didn't rape? And I'm not saying that happens all the time. Don't get me wrong. But it does happen. Now, here's the final blow, Kim. This is what I was leading up to. Not long after that, somebody did some research and it found out that this woman and her husband were convicted con artists.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, they had what do they call that? A rap sheet like 10 miles long. Both of them were scumbags. Scumbags, right? They pictured her to be this housewife with three kids. No, she was a con artist. So I'm picturing in my mind a likely scenario. Yes. She went up to the hotel room with Sean. Again, this is in my mind. Maybe they had sex, and you know, Sean had just won. What was it? $400,000 for his Miss Olympia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think she tried to blackmail him. Said to him, "Look, pay me $100,000 or something like that, or I'll scream rape." And Schultz said, I'm not going to pay you $100,000. You came. I didn't force you to do anything. So she went out and she accused him of rape, right? Mm-hmm. Now, this is just going through my mind. About a day later, I go to Gold's at night. There he is doing aerobics again, Sean. He's sitting on one of the stationary bikes. I go up to him, you know, because I'd already known, you know, met him there. I did the interview with him. I said, Sean, I just want you to know a lot of people are ripping you apart on the internet, Facebook. They're convicting you before the trial. I said, I personally think that, you know, I'm holding back any opinion on this because I want to see the evidence. I said, anyone can make a claim. There's no evidence. I said, people are convicting you. They're not going by through the legal channels. I said, as far as I'm concerned, you're a good guy and I'm your friend. And I shook hands with him. And the guy had tears in his eyes.
Wow.
But I was talking from my heart. I meant that. And to this day, I still don't believe it. I mean, if I hadn't seen that woman's, you know, her rap sheet, I probably would have my doubts. I don't have any doubts now. I think her and her husband are freaking con artists. Mm. And you know what I mean? I don't think he was guilty because I know that Sean was like, you know, he liked to procreate. What can I say? I mean, you know, that was his personality. He liked, you know, in fact, he had a little girl with a woman and I thought that was his wife. But Sean Ray again tells me that he never married her, that she was his as quote unquote baby mama. That's the word Sean. And Sean says, this is like a conversation between me and him, wasn't on Facebook. He says that, you know, that's the way Sean is. I said, well, you should know, Sean, you were like that yourself. I said, but you were lucky because no woman ever could accuse you of rape. You got lucky.
And just hearing that is just, it's so sad how it ended, you know, with him dying like this. He never had a chance to go back. Just, man, he was such a great champion. When I saw him win, and he beat Phil Heath. I think he could have won several years, and I think he would have beat Big Ramy, you know.
Yeah, I believe he would have too.
I mean, the guy had really, Phil, correct me, what weak points did this guy have?
Oh, beautiful structure too. Beautiful.
Yeah. Frame. Well, that's what it was. He had the size, but he had the beautiful structure.
The beautiful X-frame structure that was just unbeatable in 100% condition.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you look at his waist structure. He had the deep abs, the nice sculptured obliques, but his waist still looked small. He was a big man with a small waist.
Small waist, yeah. Great abs.
He had that great lat taper. I mean, a wide lats. When he did double arm, he had very wide, thick lats, full lats. I mean, and when I used to walk around in the gym, one of the first things I noticed about him, when he used to come and do aerobics at night, remember, this was the off season, he was much bigger. His calves were huge.
Yeah, his legs were huge too.
Beautiful leg development.
I mean, off season, his calves were gigantic in the off season.
Wow. Mm.
You know, he got a little smaller when he got in shape, but still, yeah. I agree with you. I think this guy could have won. I mean, somebody said, well, you know, he was older. He was 43. How many Olympias? Let me tell you, if he could get in that shape or even a little bit better.
Yeah.
He might have won who knows how many more Olympias, you know, if this hadn't happened, you know?
Yeah, no disrespect to Brandon Curry, but I think he wouldn't be Brandon Curry the next year, yeah.
I have to agree. I like Brandon Curry. I think he's a great guy, a terrific bodybuilder, but if it's between him and Sean.
Sean, yeah.
At 100% condition, both. I don't know if you agree with me, Phil. I'd have to agree with Sean. Only because Sean has a little bit more of aesthetic build.
Yeah, any of the legs, too.
Legs, yeah. Exactly. Legs.
That's right.
Right.
Well, let's talk about the subject of all these. I mean, do you think it's just coincidence that all these bodybuilders are just dying so soon? I mean, I was looking at some of our former legends, you know, like Bill Pearl is still with us. He's 91. Jack LaLanne lived to 96.
Right.
Joe Weider lived until he was 94.
True.
Ben Weider was 85 when he passed away. Clancy Ross was 85. Joe Gold was 82. Ed Corney was 86. Harold Poole died at 70. Vince Gironda died at 79. Reg Park was 79 when he passed away. Steve Reeves was 74. He kind of died young. But, I mean, all these guys, 70s, 80s, 90s, obviously the sport is different. You know, the sport has changed a lot over the last 50 years. The standards now are you got to be bigger and you got to be ripped. You got to be shredded. And I think it's just placing more and more of a demand on these bodybuilders. I mean, I remember like growing up in the 1980s working out at this hardcore gym, and I would listen to like what all the guys were doing, you know, just hearsay and stuff. And everybody did cycles, 8 weeks on, 4 weeks off, 8 weeks on, 6 weeks off. Now I don't think they really take any time off. You know, I mean, I was looking at the social media right after the Olympia. I saw like three guys, Rami, Hadi Chopin, and Nick Walker, training hard for 2022. I'm like, the contest just ended. They're already killing it for the show, which isn't until next December. Well, I'm like, man, there's no break. These guys are just pushing it so hard.
But it's pedal to the metal 100% all the time, then, which is incorrect.
Yeah. Even Ronnie Coleman, I remember Ronnie would take off 3 months, no weights, no drugs, nothing, 3 months after the show, wouldn't touch a weight, and then would go back in January.
Yeah. Well, not only that, John, you see, the thing is that these guys have, I think we've spoken about this, but I know I've talked to you about this, Phil, these so-called coaches, they're getting a lot of bad advice, and I'm not trying to cast aspersions. You know, what I'm saying is that there apparently is something, I think the term is called coasting.
Yeah.
Instead of getting off. Now you pointed out, John, correctly that the guys in the past, after they won, they take it easy. You know, maybe they take a complete layoff for a couple of months.
Well, I remember you talking about Arnold all the time.
Right. All the guys back then, Zane, Arnold, every guy from the so-called classic era, the 70s, after contests, they would barely train. They would do maintenance workouts. Frank and Arnold, maybe 3-4 times a week, they'd come in for a half hour, 40 minutes. That's it. They didn't knock themselves out. They didn't kill them. Of course, they didn't look like they were in contest shape, but they still maintained something. They didn't lose completely, you know. But now you have this thing where these guys do what they call – and, of course, I should add, no drugs.
Right.
There's no reason to take drugs in the off season, you know. I mean – like in those days, it was still the old bulking up thing. Rather than rely on drugs, the guys would just shovel food down. You know, the only other guy who does that today that I can think of besides Sean is Lee Priest. Still does that crap where he puts on a lot of weight in between contests. But the point being that nobody took the steroids in between contests. There was no reason to. You take them before the show, not during. You know, Now they have this thing called coasting, where they have this belief that if you don't get off the steroids completely but reduce it down to the minimal levels, now they have this idea, the philosophy on coasting is that rather than get off steroids completely, if you stay on like a relatively low dose year-round, it'll allow you not only to keep the muscle size but also to gain more muscle in the off-season than you would if you got off no steroid. This is dangerous and fallacious thinking. Because medically speaking, luckily, the side effects, most of the side effects that occur when you take steroids recede when you get off them. For example, when you take orals, you get a liver inflammation, right? If you get off the steroids, your liver goes back to normal. When you take the steroids, you get an aberration in what they call the blood lipids, like LDL cholesterol goes up, HDL goes down. It kind of sets you up for heart disease. But when you get off the steroids, especially with the bodybuilder's clean eating and exercise, it goes back, it recedes back to normal. The problem with the so-called coasting is that when you stay on the low dose, you don't allow the body to basically clear out the crap that's still in there, and it stays in there and continues to do damage. Right. Now, if you say to me, which organ is most affected by that? The liver, if you stay on orals, the liver will be definitely in a constant state of inflammation, which sets you up for possible, you know, cirrhosis or even possible liver cancer. It's a possibility, you know. I'm not saying it's a definite thing, but it's a possibility. But the worst thing, I think, is the effect on the cardiovascular system. Because when you stay on the steroids, you stay in a type of cardiac scenario that favors heart attacks and strokes. Because you don't give your body a chance to kind of get back to normal. And I think that this is one of the problems with the guys today. What I'm saying is,
is that because of the LDL and HDL cholesterol?
Yeah, it knocks LDL down to nothing. You know, I mean, it raises HDL. LDL.
Yeah,
and HDL is practically barely discernible. Yeah. But it does other things. For example, it increases the chances of internal blood clots. Now, an internal blood clot is the main cause of most heart attacks. What happened to what was the guy's name I was just talking about? The Muscle Beach guy who I just had a heart attack.
Oh, Kali Muscle.
Yeah, Kali. He was saying that how he had his left artery completely blocked, the doctors told him. Now, what he had there was a buildup of atherosclerosis, which is a buildup of plaque, combined with what he probably did is he threw a clot that, because he already had the narrowed arteries, the blood couldn't get through to his left ventricle, and there's your heart attack, see? And when you take steroids, you increase the chances of a clot or a thrombus forming, you know what I mean? And you know, so you're at greater risk of having a heart attack or a stroke. And also, you know, if you're taking, for example, a lot of testosterone, you have a third problem where your blood gets too thick, viscosity. It's called hematocrit. If the hematocrit gets too high, again, your chances of having especially a stroke go up into the stratosphere. A lot of bodybuilders and powerlifters have, and these are young guys, have had strokes. Most of them survive. They had strokes because they're on high dose steroid thing. They had the elevated him, and they didn't do anything with the hematocrit. So, you know, I mean, that's the danger of staying on, you know, the so-called coasting bullshit. That's crap.
I don't even know. I'm not sure what these guys are doing. I'm not up on. I don't talk to any of the current pros or anything. I don't know if they're doing lower dosages in the off season though. I think from what I'm hearing, you know, from some of the podcasts I listen to, I think they're pretty much doing high stuff, high dosages all the time.
That's suicide. If you're doing that, you might as well take a gun and play Russian roulette. You know, spin the barrel on it and click the thing. They're playing Russian roulette with their lives. I mean, this guy Dallas McCarver, you know, dead at what was it, 26 or 27?
26. Yeah.
I mean, this guy apparently, I don't think he was training for a contest when he died, but you know, the rumor was that he was taking 15,000 milligrams of testosterone a week. That is not coasting.
Right.
I mean, that's full throttle.
I think 1,000 is pretty normal with a lot of these guys.
Wow.
That's crazy. I mean, your body, John, Phil, your body makes, a man makes 11 milligrams of testosterone a day. 11 milligrams.
That's it.
Right. All the cells, the androgen receptors, they're all set up to accept 11 milligrams a day. So what happens when you take 1,000 milligrams?
So Jared, there has to be a point where your receptors won't take it in, right?
Well, here's the thing. That's interesting. What happens is, strangely enough, when you take large doses of steroids, your body actually creates new androgen receptors to try and accommodate the extra steroids.
Okay.
Right? But see, the thing is, so in other words, you're actually using the extra drug, but the thing is, you're also increasing all the side effects that are attendant with the use of those higher dosages. And again, to stay on that, like you said, if they're on high dose stuff, like Big Ramy, all these other guys, I really hate to say this. I do. I really do, because I have nothing against anybody, seriously. But I'm making a prediction. This is not the end. There's going to be more deaths, and there's going to be more guys in the hospital. If they keep this up, I predict you're going to hear more and more of this. It's going to be a regular occurrence.
It's going to continue. Yeah.
It's going to continue. Yep. It's going to continue.
You know, you were talking about like Arnold and Zane and all those guys back in the day, and they would just take off. And I've seen pictures of Arnold like in between contests, and I always kind of admired him for not really giving a shit what he looked like. He would go to the beach and be in like swimming trunks, and he was much smaller, much softer. He didn't care, you know. He wasn't on stage at the Mr. Olympia. He didn't care what he looked like. He was comfortable with his body. And I think now what's happening, and this just kind of occurred to me as we were talking about this, social media is such a big thing now over the last 5 years, 10 years. Now you've got Instagram, you've got YouTube. I look at YouTube. I mean, there's different YouTube channels that report on bodybuilding, and they're 7 days a week, every day. What's going on? What's going on today? Let's see how this guy's looking. Let's see how this guy's looking. If you take off the drugs and you lose your size and you lose your shape, oh my God, that'll be like a national headline. But look at this guy. Oh, you know, so they're under constant pressure to constantly look good 365 days of the year. Like I said, these top three guys at the Mr. Olympia are already training for next year. There's no break.
No break. I get a kick out of some guys will write, like you say, in the social media or whatever. They'll look at Arnold or Franco when he was still alive. And, you know, they don't look like they did when they won the Olympia, not even a shadow. And they'll say, oh, look at Arnold. He looks like shit.
He's in his 70s.
Franco, he wears his arm. He has no arm development, nothing. What happened? What the fuck, man? These guys are like older men whose competition days were fucking years. Why would you expect them to look like they did when the Olympia? You think Arnold gives a shit about looking in the Olympia? Why? Why would he? First of all, he would kill himself to try and do that.
Right.
The best that Arnold could do, the best that any of us can do past a certain age, is to try and look in some kind of condition.
Yeah.
To try and look
stay
like
alive.
To try and look at 55 or over the same you looked at 25 is idiocy. It's not going to happen. And yes, there are certain what they call outlier guys, where you'll see a photo of a guy. I've seen a couple of these. You guys probably have to. They'll post a picture of a guy who has from the neck down, he looks like he's 25. He has beautiful skin, full muscles, and it says he's 55, 60 years old, right?
Yeah, we talked about that, Jerry.
You know what? I'm always suspicious of that. I think that there's two things going on there. Either it's been Photoshopped where they kind of like, you know, get rid of the flaws in the physique.
Yeah.
Or and there was one guy who was doing that, who was passing himself off as 55. He had gray hair, so everybody believed him. Turns out the guy was 42. He wasn't anything here. He was doing what I call the Beckles technique.
Named
after the great Albert Beckles.
Right.
So to this day, Phil, we talked about, to this day goes around, he claims to be 91 years old, born in 1930. Same age as the great Bill Pearl.
Right.
Never that. He always lied. He always added at least a decade.
Right.
In other words, in his mind, the man, let's face it. I mean, Bill, you saw him. We all saw him at his peak when he was a great, great bodybuilder.
He
didn't need to exaggerate.
Right.
But I guess in Albert's mind, he said, wow, if they think I'm like, 55 years old and beating guys 25, that makes me look
add
like
to the mystique.
That's the mystique. Makes me look like Superman.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, the guy is an older guy. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
He's not 91. No. So that's what a lot of these guys do on the social media. You know, a guy will have gray hair and, he'll add 10, 15 years to say, look at me. You know, I mean, you go, and your other guys look like shit, but look, I still look like I'm 25 from the neck down. They're liars. You know, I mean, they're liars. There might be some very rare instances, very rare. I mean, like one in a million of some guy who still retains a lot of muscle past 55, but it's very rare.
Yeah.
Well, I've noticed that social media is full of half lies and it's white lies and half truths.
Yeah. But, John, you raise a good point. The fact that, there's always this kind of focus on the top guys on how they look all the time.
Yeah.
And there is pressure. I mean, these guys can't do what Arnold did.
Right.
Arnold, and I can confirm that. It's true. Arnold didn't give a shit.
Right.
He'd walk around wearing short sleeve shirts, no arm definition, no del, no pecs. He didn't give a crap. Arnold's attitude was, okay, I look this way now, but let's see how I look at the Olympia.
There you go. Yeah.
And that's what counts. Who cares what he looks like off season? He's not competing.
And everybody was doing the same thing, right? I mean, nobody cared. Right.
Nobody. Yeah.
Or you could say this. When he was in shape, they took pictures for the whole year. So each of those pictures were spread out throughout the year. So it wasn't like social media now where you have to post something every day. I don't know if they feel like they have to post a picture of how big they are.
They feel like they have to post something every day. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Every day.
That's right.
And a lot of these bodybuilders, if they have contracts with supplement companies, although that's fading, is, you know, compared to what it used to be. That used to be a much bigger thing. Yeah. But these supplement companies will say you have to post on social media. That's part of your contract.
Sure.
That's right. And not only that, but if they make it, let's say the company has a booth at some expo or something like that.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, if the bodybuilder has to appear in the booth as part of the contract, if they look like shit,
yeah,
the company will say that's a bad reflection on our product because you represent our company, and people will look at you and say, wait a minute, this guy used a product. He looks like this. I'm not buying the product.
Absolutely right.
I know it's stupid to say that, but that's what these people believe. It's dumb. And you're right, Phil. In the past, you know, they had the magazines. There was no social media. So the photos could be, you didn't have to be in there. Because all the public saw, unless they saw you in person, was those pictures. 6 months after the show, Arnold could be in one of Weed and Magazine wearing, you know, looking like he did at Mr. Olympia. And people would assume, Arnold still looks like that.
Right.
Unless you saw him in person like I did, you didn't know.
Right.
So
the magazines came out once a month, and there was no updated stuff, you know.
Yeah. And then you have this guy who just got this last Mr. Olympia, George Peterson.
Yeah, 37.
37 years old. Now, this guy was a great bodybuilder.
He was.
Mm-hmm. Great. And from what I understand, I never met the man. I understand he was just a terrific guy. Everybody liked him, right? He's in his hotel room. He's there at the venue getting ready to compete. I don't know. Was he going to go into 212? I don't know.
John. 212, yeah. 212.
He was going to compete in the 212 event. And they find him dead in his room, you know? I mean, the guy has no body fat. You know, I mean, he's in superb physical condition. Why does a guy 37 drop dead in his room? In fact, his trainer or his coach made a statement. They said he saw him the night before. He was in a great mood, had lots of energy, and felt great. Next day, he's dead. What the hell's going on there?
Do they know what he died of?
I haven't heard anything.
The autopsy hasn't come out yet.
But I can tell you right now what's going to turn out to be. There's only two things that can cause that kind of sudden death at that age. One of them is the same thing that did in Sean, you know, sudden heart attack or stroke. That'll do it, right? The second thing is indirectly related, and this is probably the more probable reason. He had a bad reaction to diuretic drugs.
I would say that.
Because you know, this happened 3 days before he was set to compete. That's when the guy started to hit the diuretics pretty strong to get rid of the last minute water. Something might have went wrong. Maybe he couldn't get a hold of the minerals he needed to replace the electrolytes that he was, because your heart doesn't work right without minerals, electrolytes.
Right.
He forgot to replace it. Something happened. He might have gone into a fatal, you know, maybe got dehydrated and set off a fatal heart arrhythmia and dropped dead. I mean, again, I'm not saying this happened. I'm speculating again, but that's the only way that he would die that suddenly at 37 years of age.
Yeah. Someone told me at the Olympia that he weighed 207 before the contest, so he wouldn't need to make weight. So they were saying that ruled out the diuretic use, but we don't know yet because we haven't.
Well, okay. So let's say he wasn't taking diuretic. Then it probably would have been some sort of cardiovascular event not related to diuretics, which would mean either a stroke or a heart attack.
Yeah.
I mean, unless somebody shoots you with a bullet or you get hit by a truck, there's no other, or a plane crashes into his hotel room. There's no other way a man in that kind of condition would drop dead at 37. And God rest his soul. I didn't know the man. I'm sorry what happened to him, but something went very wrong with him is all I can say. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I always think the same thing when someone young dies that suddenly they weren't sick. I always think it's usually a heart attack too.
And remember one thing, you know, related to this too, Phil and John, when you take steroids, it changes the structure of your heart. You know what I mean? In other words, if you take them, your heart actually changes structure. When I said earlier that everything goes back to normal, I meant stuff like lipids, like cholesterol, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But changes that the steroids, and especially growth hormone's even worse. But the change that it causes to the heart, they don't regress, you know, and you know, it can catch up with you where you could again drop dead. You know what I mean? Again, I'm not, you know, trying to cast any aspersions. I'm not trying to say this is what happened to George Peterson or Sean Roden, but I'm saying steroids are known, documented to do that. You know, they cause changes in what they call the left ventricle. I'm thinking of Chickles, the old chewing gum. You know, the left ventricle of the heart. Chewing gum won't hurt you. Chewing gum won't hurt you unless it gets stuck in your windpipe. You. By the way, that could also kill you, Pat.
Right.
No. So
I always thought it was might be diuretics, and I'll tell you why. Do you remember in Chicago?
Yeah.
Okay, I started Aldactone prior to the show, okay?
Yeah.
But I took potassium with that. I took potassium with a potassium-sparing diuretic.
That's right.
And when I called you, I couldn't move.
Yeah, I remember that.
I could not move. I wouldn't have made the show if you had to brought in that sodium chloride and pulled me out of that. There's no way I would have been able to compete. To be honest with you, to this day, I don't remember the show. I don't know how I got through it. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I'll do it on automatic pilot because I don't remember any of the events.
Yeah. I remember you telling me, remember Bill Grant was, we took you to a restaurant, you know?
I don't remember that, Jerry.
We took you to a restaurant because I figured you were, your face was like nothing left. I wanted you to get some fluid in you, you know? So we took you there and I remember you saying to me, I think I might die, you told me. I said, Phil,
I don't remember any of that.
That's what you said. You thought you were going to die. And I said, Phil, don't worry about it. You'll be okay. We're just going to get some fluid. And of course, you know, the rest is history. You won the show and beat the shit out of Gary Stridham. You were there, Ken, right? I mean, you know.
Yeah, I was there. Yeah.
If you hadn't have been there and answered that phone, who knows? It'd have been a sad story.
Well, you know, a similar event. I know I've told this story about 99 times, but since we're on this subject, I'll have to bore you, John, by telling you this again. You know, you heard this. At one of the Arnold shows, you know, Lex Wheeler. By the way, I'm praying for a sec, for Flex Wheeler because, you know, he told me, you guys probably know he's in the hospital. I don't know whether he's still there in Florida.
He's been there about 2 weeks.
You know, and what really scared me was when I read that he was going into renal failure because, Flex already had severe kidney problems. He had a renal transplant. I mean, you know, if his kidneys go, I'm not even going to finish the sentence. You know what I mean? So anyway, I was there. And I get a call in my hotel room. I was covering the contest in Weider, and it's Robin Chang, who later went on to produce the Olympia. At the time, he was Flex Wheeler's manager. And he says, Jerry, could you come to the room and take a look at Flex? Now, guys used to call me all the time, and usually it was they want, like Samir did this a couple of times. They wanted me to come to the room. In fact, it happened during your show. A couple of guys in Chicago also asked me to come to the room. Me and Grant, they wanted me to look and see how they look because it was right before the show. You know, do I have it together? Do you think I could do blah, blah, blah? They wanted my opinion. And that's what I thought it was. So I walk in the room and the first thing I see is Flex's fiance, who was, what's his name again? Daughter, John? The guy who left.
Ron Love's daughter.
Yeah, Ron Love's daughter, you know. She's crying. She has tears running. I'm thinking, oh shit, what the hell's going on here? So he takes me in the bedroom and I'll never forget it. There's Flex lying in his posing trunks with his arms out like this. And he's just looking straight up and he could barely talk. And I said, Flex, what's going on, man? He says, Jerry, I can't move. I feel like my whole body's been paralyzed. I said, what? And I remember this was after the prejudging, by the way. He had already won the contest. He was in fantastic shape.
What year was that, Jerry? Do you remember?
I can't. It was the late 90s, but they said it was one of the best appearances he ever had.
98, maybe?
Yeah, I think around 98 it was, yeah. And so I said to him, Flex, what did you do? He says, between me and you, I took some drugs to try and get rid of last-minute water. I said, you mean diuretics? He says, yeah. He says, I took Oriametrin and Cytadrin. I said, wait a minute. You took Oriometrin and Cytadrin? He says, yeah, why? I said, that's the same drug. I said, Flex, you overdosed. I said, that's a very powerful drug. I said, you basically knocked out all the electrolytes in your body. And so that's what you're experiencing right now. So I turned to Robert Chang. I said, Robert, go to a drugstore right away, get some distilled water and get some, what's that stuff they used to get for muscle cramps? I can't remember. Oh God! Oh,
Pedialyte?
Huh?
Not Pedialyte?
No, I had him take a Pedialyte too, But there was a this old treatment for muscle cramps. I can't remember what it's called. Mm. But I had him get some of that. And, you know, I stayed with him. And, you know, within about 45 minutes, he was fine. And he went back and easily won the contest. And people said he, at that time, was in the best shape of his life.
Yeah, that was 98. Yeah.
Later on, he wrote a this is related to what you said, Phil. Later on, he wrote his autobiography. And I was looking through it. And there was a part in there where we talked about that contest. And he said that he didn't say why. He said, I experienced a severe health problem. And I called world famous nutritionist Jerry Brenner. He called me Jerry Brenner. He says, Jerry Brenner came to my room and saved my life.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, whoa. I said, he's giving me a little bit too much credit here, man. I mean, I don't think I saved his life. I said, helped him get over the diuretic, the drug problem. But I mean, I'm not saying he would have died if I wasn't there. But, you know, who knows? I mean, you know, the guy was so grateful that the next year I had already kind of had a problem with some of the people at the Weider office. I stopped. This is 99, I think it was, the next year. And, Flex, you know, he was down, back to normal, and he was going to compete, you know, against Ronnie. And he said, Jerry, are you coming to the Olympia? I said, no. I said, you know, I'm not working for Joe anymore, and I guess I'm not going. He says, oh, why don't you come? He says, I'll tell you what. I said, I'll pay your hotel room and everything as a token of my appreciation for what you did for me last year at the Arnold Show. I said, well, I feel funny. I mean, you don't have to do that for me, Flex. He said, well, let me put it this way. You act as a consul to me, okay, in case I have any problems, if it's okay. I said, no problem. In that case, I'll do it. So I went to the Olympia. I think that was the year when he, you know, got mad on stage.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting story.
But it also happened to Matarazzo, right, at the Arnold in 93.
Yeah, that's another
case. He got super ripped, and he had problems with diuretics.
That also reminds me of what happened to Phil. That was, again, the Arnold Show. Remember, there was a bus that used to take you to the hotel.
Yeah.
And it was, like, super cold back there in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
And I catch the bus to go to the Arnold contest. It was for the prejudging. There's only one other guy in the bus, Mike Matarazzo. And I knew Mike. I got along real well with him. He was from Boston. I was from New York. We hit it off real good. We were like good friends, you know. So I said, Mike, how you doing? Are you ready for the show? And I'll never forget. He turns to me. He said, Jerry, he said, I think I'm going to die. I said, what? He says, I can't even describe to you how bad I feel. I don't know if I can even pose. I said, Mike, what the hell's going on? Turns out. Did the same thing Phil did. He took aldactone with some idiot told him to take a bunch of potassium with it.
Yeah.
He did, and he was having too much potassium in his body. It was causing heart arrhythmias. It was causing all kinds of brain problems, you know, because it messes up all your electrolytes. His sodium doesn't work right. He was cramping up. So what I told him to do is, I think I told him, I said, as soon as you get there, grab something that has a lot of salt. I said, grab something that has a lot of salt and, you know, and just drink some fluid. I don't know whether he listened to me or not. I didn't follow through, but he wound up competing and he didn't die or something. Like he never, and of course, then we have the story of Paul Dillette. You know, that's a favorite. You guys remember that when Paul froze?
Sure, when they had to carry him off stage.
That was Arnold's show too, wasn't it?
Yeah, 96.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay, now Paul Dillette was also a good friend of mine, right? And Paul had this habit before a contest. He used to call a bunch of guys to ask them their opinions on various drugs. He called about 15 different guys, right? He called me, and right before that happened, he called me to come to his apartment. He was like freaking out because he was like. He said he couldn't relax. He felt like he was going out of his mind. Well, that turned out to be something called thyroid storm. What happened was he was taking oral thyroid drugs, and somebody had given him a topical thyroid cream. They said it would make him look more cut. But when he took the topical thyroid cream, the combination of that and the oral thyroid made his thyroid go through the stratosphere. So he was completely out of control. So what I did was, I told him, I said, I don't know where you're going to get it, but try and get this drug called a beta blocker. I told him to use this stuff called Enderol. I said, that'll stop it immediately. And I don't know whether he did or not, but he didn't die, obviously. Now, but at the Arnold show, like 2 weeks before, he was calling me up every day asking me, how much should I take of this? How much of that? You know, so then about a couple of days before the show, he asked me about diuretics. And the diuretic program, he told me, I don't remember it exactly, but it wasn't that bad. I know Lasix was one of them, for SMI. Lasix was one of the drugs. What I didn't know was that right after he spoke to me, he called another guy. Again, he's still around. I don't want to embarrass him by mentioning his name. I personally think this guy's a jack off, but he's been around. You know, he's worked for a magazine. I don't want to mention this guy nauseates me. But anyway, he makes statements like steroids are safe. Nobody ever dies from that kind of shit. But anyway, he reminds me of these anti-vaxxers. But anyway, the thing, and he is an anti-vaxxer. But the point is, he tells Paul. The day of the show, get this, John. The day of the show, he tells him to take a Lasix injection right before he goes for the prejudging. And Paul listens to him, and that is what caused him to get like this. When they
locked up. Yeah.
Four guys had to rush on stage.
They carried him like he was a Borg.
Remember that?
Yes.
I mean, and the audience. I looked around, everybody's mouth dropped. They had no idea what was going on. That was a unique situation. Paul had to go to the emergency room. He went to the emergency room, and luckily they pulled him out of it. They gave him the electrolytes, and he was fine. But my point in saying this is that things can go wrong real fast with these drugs. Yeah,
absolutely.
And you're seeing that with these deaths.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. That was part one of our interview with Jerry Branum and Phil Williams. So next week, of course, we will have part two of that interview where we'll continue our discussion about what's going on in the world of bodybuilding today. I also want to thank our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I want to thank our continued support from our Patreon donors. If you guys are interested in being a Patreon donor, you can go to the website bodybuildinglegendshow.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, you will see the link to be a Patreon donor. And guys, now that I am free from my full-time job, I will be giving much more to you guys who are generous with your donations, and I'll be giving you some articles and some videos and some extra stuff that no one else will get. But you guys will get it because you're helping support the show with Patreon. So thank you very much for that. All right. Without any further ado, I want to read this article called Arnold, Life with and Without Steroids, written by Armand Tanney. And this was from the August 1978 issue of Muscle Builder and Power magazine. It says steroids are effective, but not all that much, claims Arnold. His hope for the future is the drugless contest. Self-inducement and positive thinking may be the next big bodybuilding breakthrough. I think a person who takes steroids for the sake of gaining a few pounds is 10 times as much a fool as the one who is taking it for competition, says Arnold. Who knows better? Going on 3 years now since he has used the stuff, he's able to make a thoughtful assessment of the meaning and worth of the muscle-building anabolics. Do you ever take the stuff anymore, Arnold? You ask him. He says never, and he comes down on the word with resounding emphasis and evident satisfaction. He is the picture of health. The same crystal clear eyes as always, the placid features with the slightly whimsical look of the typical big time athlete. He remains in the same apartment, updated mainly with new artifacts, one of them a painting by Leroy Neiman, autographed something like, "If there is such a thing as a hero in this world, Arnold, then you are my hero." It hangs in his living room. You can't miss it. He still conducts his business at the kitchen table with the telephone ringing. That pleasant familiarity won't last. He will be moving his affairs to a big office building he has purchased in Santa Monica. There is a health risk in taking steroids, he says. That's number one. And second, you go back to your original size when you stop taking them, every time. That, without a doubt, is one of the major effects of steroids. The shrinkage is glaring in title winners away from the stuff a month or two after their victory. Gone are the incisive cuts and the looping peaks. Oh, not entirely, but diminished nonetheless. If a guy thinks he wants to gain 10 pounds of muscle, he'd be better off getting it through hard, heavy training and crash weight gain formula number 7 rather than the other way, because then it'll be more permanent, says Arnold. The drug muscles will always disappear. It's like what happens with LSD and cocaine. When the effects wear off, the ball is over, and there you are. Arnold insists every bodybuilder should know the risk involved in taking steroids. You got to project ahead, he thinks. Realize what long-range effects it might have on your kidneys and liver, say 10 years from now. Will the benefits outweigh its drawbacks? At this point in time and research, the use of anabolic drugs remains a gamble. Quote, I think it's important he puts it in the right context. You have on one side the risk factor, and on the other, what you can gain from it. If winning a contest has priority, then of course you should take it. If health comes first, then you shouldn't take it. It's like a racing car driver. He knows when he goes in a race, for him, it's more important to win the race, to participate in the race, than is his life. There's a chance of getting killed or burned or maimed. Yes, they go back to racing. The same with drugs. If this is your decision, winning is what you want, you take the drugs. The question of drugs prevails in all sports today. If the boxer knows he can go full steam for 12 rounds by popping a little speed instead of pooping in the seventh, he's going to use it. Neither are there geographical limits. The condition exists worldwide. The magnitude of sports today lures with its special appeal in terms of fame and money, plus the very special need for self-realization and accomplishment. It is a gamble, and you put your health on the line. That's the consensus. From his own experience, Arnold states, most of the time, people I know who have taken it have not had any side effects from it. So there is that side of it, the possibility of gain without risk. Guys like Zane, Franco, myself, Sergio, and others have not experienced any damage. We experimented. Then we must consider the guys like Pearl, Reeves, and Park, who claimed they had not taken it. I still think that if steroids had never been heard of, the names on the victory list from 1948 to the present would still be the same. That's true when you consider that a generation of bodybuilders in which millions of guys were taking steroids, only one Arnold, one Sergio, one Franco, one Zane were produced. Where were all the others if they had equal opportunity? Some became champs, a lot of them did not. A bodybuilder must prepossess a number of other qualities to become a champ, far more important than the chemistry of drugs. Arnold still insists that the most successful bodybuilders had an early history of disciplined lives. He's always mentioned his own early urge to achieve, to prove to his parents and others that he could become something special. It seems fortuitous that he should have selected bodybuilding. Perhaps his very decision was genetically controlled. No champs were oblivious to their early qualities. The more champions one knows, the more their awareness in them becomes evident. Franco brought with him the strength that once stopped the Roman legions in Sardinia. Robinson was by nature an athlete, making the most of a primitive urge to survive. Zane, like Reeves, wore the mantle of exotic beauty and very early knew that he must preserve and enhance it. The desire has to be born in you, Arnold believes. You can't create it from nothing. I was born with an enormous desire to be a winner. I have a brother who wasn't. I wanted respect, notoriety, and ego satisfaction. It meant a lot to me to be on stage posing before 5,000 people. It's a desire you can't put into somebody. You have it or you don't. The second most important thing is the body structure. If your muscles are all fucked up looking, what are you going to do with it? You can't change it. Basic body structures are not all the same. Zane, myself, Robinson, we were born with our structures. We can improve them with muscle, but we could not change them around. Food is important. Steroids won't help at all if you don't have the right amount of protein, vitamins, and minerals. Your body will become overtrained. All those things, desire, structure, food, I place ahead of steroids. The steroids provide a finishing touch, maybe 5% of it all, if the other things are present. Of course, without that final few percent of improvement brought on by steroids, you could lose. The competition is that close. If others are taking steroids and you don't, you gamble with your chance of winning. Steroids can put you on an emotional roller coaster. No more volatile atmosphere exists anywhere than in a gym full of competitors training for the big one. Dispositions have cutting edges. High and low moods move in and out like barometric pressures. Friendships strain, and often guys acquire a training partner and go into closed circuit, cutting off any other modulation. Post-contest depression sets in also, as you watch the muscles deflate. I never trained for the beach look, says Arnold. So if I lost a bit after a contest, I didn't care because what people thought out there didn't bring me any money and glory. All that mattered is what the judges thought. Another thing is some guys get depressed after a contest because their strength falls off. they can't do the same number of reps and use the same weights that they did using the steroids. The energy level falls off. A dozen things happen that could be discouraging. Arnold has always trained heavily, oriented mentally. There seems to be some support for the suggestion that steroid effects are imaginary and that such auto-suggestion is responsible for accelerated muscle growth. Dr. Golding of the IFBB Medical Committee offers that possibility. Says Arnold, I've had people come to me 4 days after they started taking steroids and they tell me what a great pump they're getting. That's medically false because even the doctors will tell you it takes at least a couple of weeks before you notice changes, sometimes more. After 6 or 8 weeks of that feeling goes away again or the process reverses. Franco Colombo, aware of steroids' contrariness, limited his use to only a few weeks, preferring not to take it the chance of being on its downscale at the time of the contest. Cal Scalak, too, attributes his massive response to the anabolic drugs to the fact that he uses them briefly and competes seldom. He hadn't used them for 14 months prior to his Neen's Mr. Universe victory. Guys who are still taking it after 3 or 4 months and say what a great pump they're getting have got to be kidding themselves, says Arnold. By that time, the drugs are working in reverse, and if they are gaining, it's more of a mental thing. Researcher Golding claims that if you fed two test groups the same amount of food but gave only one of them steroids, there would not be serious changes in muscle size. In other words, steroid growth is dependent on an increased intake of food. Thus, it seems quite possible that the body could be trained to utilize more food even in the absence of steroids. Arnold admits that it has helped him, but I feel it's gotten too much credit. People think you can gain 20 or 30 pounds of muscle, which you cannot. There is no such thing. My own body weight throughout the year was between 225 and 230, and I always competed at the same weight. I was 225 when I won my last Mr. Olympia title in 1975. Long before that time, I weighed 260 without steroids. I was massive, but I had no cuts. You can gain body weight with steroids, but it can be mostly water retention plus a lot of fat. It depends on what you want. This fact was certainly borne out at the 1978 Mr. Olympia weigh-in. Most of the contestants, veterans of previous Olympia shows, showed hardly any body weight increase over previous years, despite their acknowledged use of steroids. Yet the quality of muscle all around had improved, undoubtedly due to the increased intensity and duration of their contest training. Generally, muscle size remains the same throughout the year. The only thing lacking is the sharpness and definition. Arnold himself has always insisted the steroids gave him an extra energy and mental push it took to carry him through his intensified contest training periods. Arnold would now like to see a reversal in steroid thinking. I would like to see competition without drugs. Chester Yorton's drugless contest in Nevada recently is a step in the right direction. Supervision of the blood checks should be tight, however. It should be handled by a medical committee, not one doctor and a promoter. The idea is good, but so far there seems to be no way to detect its absence more than a week prior to its cutoff point. Certainly, the drugless contest would be the most desirable. Recent studies, particularly among track and field athletes, have proved that psychological self-inducement can arouse the body to spectacular performances. Russia has gotten into such experiments and reports progress. This aspect of the sport remains a challenge and one that bodybuilders could effectively pursue. I think drugs are phasing out, Arnold suggests. They talk about it less in the gyms than they used to. I seldom hear them talking dosages, probably because normal use has been violated so extremely. There seems to be more discussion of mental feeling and available energy. Zane was a perfect example this past year. He trained with the thought in mind that he was the ordained winner. He made himself believe it. Positive thinking worked for him. Dependence on anabolic drugs to support a lifestyle has more recently become known. Oddly enough, this phenomenon has occurred as much among powerlifters as among bodybuilders. Arnold avoided it by training for competition mainly, de-emphasizing his beach appearance. Others of his era did the same. Today, however, the prevalence of fantastic physiques out on the streets tends to psych a guy who has made a world of his body and appearance. If he can't be anything less than spectacular at all times, then he must resort to the physical and moral support of steroids. By any other name, it remains an addiction. Powerlifters have confessed to this also. A fellow who builds his world around him on the strength of his 500-pound bench gets wigged when deprived of his power, such as the withholding of drugs. His self-image must be sustained and steroids prop him up. He is hooked, and if he's not a mumbling stupor of the normal heroin addict, he's not living unless he's high on strength. All those great bodybuilders that I used to train with never took the drugs to excess, says Arnold. Beginners had the idea that if Arnold took three, they could take nine and get good three times as fast. That is a health-destroying theory. The bodybuilders who have stayed around for a long time are the ones who have not abused their health, those who have been competing for 10 or 15 years. How extensive is steroid use among people training in general? Arnold says he doesn't know. I don't ask them because you can never get a straight answer, he says. I know that the competitors use it. Back in the late 60s, some people were taking steroids like candy. I don't see that anymore. I think in general its use has fallen off. Perhaps it has a lot to do with the growing attitude against drugs in America these days. There aren't their flower children, hippies, and protesting students around anymore. Drugs did not work, so now people are finding other ways of clearing up their emotional and mental problems. Just like they'll find drug-free ways of building super muscle soon, hopefully. The effects of drugs has never been long-lasting, either mentally or physically. Now they look for permanent results with things like transcendental meditation, EST, group therapy, and so forth. Arnold claims perfect health now. He looks it. He no longer eats six or seven meals a day, maybe two or three now. He runs 3 miles four times a week in addition to an hour in the gym every day. He takes no steroids. He works at his business more, 8 to 10 hours a day. His travel experiences today are different. His social and nightlife has moved to higher ground. He looks good in clothes, but could never win a contest. His waist is tight. The arm is still huge, and he rolls up his sleeve to flex the great biceps that hasn't changed much since the time the crowds roar to it. The only difference is the strange quiet of the dining room interview. His blood pressure is now 120 over 80. When he was hard at it, it was 150 over 90. He's more relaxed. I feel better now than when I was in top shape a few years ago, he says. I ski every winter now. When I was training, I continually monitored my blood, liver, and kidneys with medical tests, and I checked out perfectly every time. So the way I use steroids was not harmful at all. Off mostly and on some, and I'm healthy today as a result. From 1968 to 1975, I took it once a year before competition. He gets up at 7 in the morning, runs, goes to the gym for an hour, and does only 5 sets of exercises per body part. He uses the Weider split system by working half the body one day, the other half the next. True, it's nothing to what he did, but I love it. I really love working out. I have an enormous need for going to the gym every day, being in touch with the weights, being in touch with the atmosphere, and being with the guys that I like so much. It's my home, where I feel most secure and most comfortable. It gives me better control over my other affairs, acting and business. It is in his Conan picture contract that he will have training equipment at all locations, plus full expenses for any training partner of his choice. The $15 million production starts shooting soon. His pride and joy is his new Jeep wagon, a big, red, powerful number with a stereo system with incredible audio juice. He runs it to the ski resorts in the backcountry. There's this constant sense of energy around Arnold. It was there when he trained. It is there now. He has learned to make things happen. He's laid in a big inventory of accomplishments so far, like his big Jeep that should carry him safely over the rough ground of life's back country. He sure got the equipment. All right. So that's our article about Arnold and drugs from the August 1978 issue of Muscle Builder and Power magazine. Arnold, of course, downplaying, I think, the use of steroids. I think they obviously add more than 5 or 10% to a physique. And I don't know if he was telling the truth about using them once a year. According to Jerry, Jerry said that he used them a lot more, especially when he was younger and in Europe. But obviously the bodybuilders did use them much, much less in those days. Like I mentioned in our interview with Jerry and Phil, I remember the bodybuilders in my gym in the 1980s always talking about doing cycles where they would go 8 weeks on, 8 weeks off. And there's no doubt about it. The drug use today has increased tremendously over what it was in the 1970s. But that was, of course, 50 years ago. So things have gotten more competitive. The bodybuilders are much bigger, and they're using more and more drugs. So unfortunately, what Arnold predicted in this article did not come true. And it's interesting how they didn't even call drug-free bodybuilding natural bodybuilding. Like now, of course, everybody calls natural bodybuilding or naturals or natties. That term did not even exist back in the 70s. You notice in the article they said drugless contest. And at the time, the only one doing that was Chet Yorton, who ran a contest in the 1978. and it was in Las Vegas, and he did a blood test. I remember seeing pictures of it in Muscle Mag International where they were actually taking blood out from the guy's arms. And Dennis Tenorino won that contest. It's interesting how things have changed for sure over the last 50 years in regards to steroids, not only in bodybuilding, but of course in all sports. And we will continue our discussion on this subject next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So that's it for the show. Glad to be back, guys. Hope you enjoyed this. And we'll be back next week with Jerry Branham and Phil Williams for part two of our interview. Until then, stay healthy, enjoy your workouts, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.